late on getting it. Rocky's Auto Service Center, Tom.
You know, when you think about it, 16 locations doesn't seem to be enough. But, you know, they've got it pretty much staked out. And Renton, you go anywhere you want, anywhere you go, you're going to get great services. Bucky's Auto Service Center works on that car. And they smile the entire time. And it is really a magical experience. A Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Bucky's is right up near the top.
Wow.
Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Oil changes, right, there was self-actualization. No. That's out at the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
Yeah, you are,
the apex. So the apex. You don't get any better in life.
Self-actualization.
I've seen it.
Just you're right scared. Below it.
I see.
Wrote, you know, do something for your car.
Car. So not really needed, just at your best.
Yeah.
You go to Buck.
Not the bottom is all the other stuff that,
that you require.
You need that. Food, water, water, shelter, stuff like
so
that.
So they're like the gravy of life.
Yeah. It's the stuff you
or
like,
the frosting.
I didn't know it could get any better.
That Bucky's always service center.
Are we done yet?
You kept bringing it back. Okay. King County, this has been going on for a long time. When I was a city councilman, Tom and Savavish.
In 1880.
Yes.
That's when the law was first put into effect.
Reed Brock, what's his name? Reed Brockwell, or Brockway or something like that, was constantly coming and saying, hey, listen, here's the deal. We've got our houses near the water, right here on the water. There's 150 homes there in Sammamish. And this trail, which used to be an old railroad trail,
yeah,
and it was an easement that was given to the railroad. It was like, okay, it is private land. It's been given an easement, so you can run the railroad through. So go ahead. So the big question gets down to, is it public land or private land? Well, it was private land that they gave the easement to the railroad. Then the railroad goes away.
I don't know if that's true, your history. What do you mean they gave it?
It's an easement. It's given, the land was then, the easement was then given to the railroad so the railroad could go through these properties.
No, you make it sound like there was a choice. I mean, didn't they have to give it to the railroad?
I guess, but the problem is, the question always gets back to, is it public land or private land?
Yes.
So then King County comes in, they put this trail in, and they want to make it wider, and they have come to the people of Sammamish, or these homeowners, and said, listen, we're building this thing wider, so if this is your private property right here, get your stuff out of here, or we're going to move it for you.
I'm glad you're no longer on the city council. It's the same distance. What the homeowners want to do is make it smaller, because they said if you're turning this from a railroad track to just a pathway, they wanted it smaller, and they said no, 100 feet's 100 feet, and that's how big the easement was. And this went all the way. This has been challenged in court. They say this has been going on for decades and decades. Challenged in court, and the Circuit Court of Appeals ruled against the homeowners and said, no, 100 feet's 100 feet. That's what is a public land. And the Supreme Court refused to listen to it. So that is the law. That's what they're dealing with. The reason it's in the news today is that these 150 homeowners just got a notice from the county and says, okay, we've got this last stretch. By the way, you can run, apparently, from once this goes through, this last patch, from Ballard all the way, you know, through Sammamish.
Yeah, and all this. That's so many people do.
Okay, well, the thing is, I think a lot of people will do when it's connected. It's sort of like the argument people are making about the bike trails and the trolleys. Anyway, they just said, you have a choice to move. You got to let us know. Do you want to move your personal property that you built over this and the kinds of things that they build are docks and boat lifts and decks and walkways and these kinds of things? Let us know by March, and if you don't want to, we'll do it for you, but this is the fair warning, let us know. There's also a separate lawsuit against 8 particular homeowners who've built things that, cabanas and walkways that they say, you've done that on public land without our permission, and you are responsible for that. But for the reason this is in the news today is the letter went out to all 150, and a lot of people are saying, that seems kind of like the heavy hand of government to suddenly give them this 3-month deadline.
Is the land public land or is it private land?
Sounds like it's public land. I mean, that's the ruling in the court. And they went.
Why does it have to be 100 feet? I thought the master plan had it to be 12 feet wide. Like the Burke-Gilman Trail is not 100 feet
wide. That's right. No, I know. But the easement, what it is King County took over for the railroad.
Right.
And so whatever the railroad had, that's what King County gets. And so they went to court, though. I mean, I understand the homeowners say, okay, listen, if you're going to turn it from a railroad track to a trail, then you don't need that much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they went to court over it, and they said, no. The law of the land is that it's at 100 feet.
Ah, okay.
So, I mean, it's been decided, then the question is how many little you know, hitches can they throw?
Yeah, is the government working with the people, or is the government working the people over? So the Sammamish homeowners have said, listen, King County's got unlimited resources to fight us in court. There's 150 of us, and we're trying to battle. We'd like to be able to say, hey, can we compromise on this sort of thing, as opposed to you guys coming in here and telling us that the thing is widened out to 100 feet. Well, the Burke-Gilman Trail is not 100 feet.
No, but I mean, this is not the Burke-Gilman Trail.
I understand, but why do you need it to be 100 feet wide?
It doesn't need to be. It just is. It's granted that. Now, you'd mentioned, are they working with it? Justin Park, an attorney representing Patricia Harrell, one of the homeowners, said, quote, she's looking forward to negotiating with the country in good faith and hopes the county and hopes they can work something out. And then and didn't say anything more. So there can be negotiations. The problem with, from the county's point of view, is they've been dragging their heels for so long. They feel like, listen, we need to, now that we've won this court case, we need to be able to proceed accordingly. Now, we'll see if there are any kind of individual arrangements. But at this point, they've lost. And so,
yeah, too bad for the people there paying all those taxes.
Well, I mean, the thing is, then
I would ask them, if you're going to take some of my property, then you're going to reduce the size of my property, then you're going to give me a break on my taxes, right? Okay. So if you're going to take away 300 feet of where you're taking away from me, then I want to be reassessed on the property, my property value. Plus, is my property value also damaged by the fact that there's a 100-foot path right behind my house or right in front of my house? Give me something to benefit.
My guess is that when they bought the property, that was in the fine print, if not in the big print, that you were aware of what you're doing. You still have lakeshore access.
It doesn't matter, Tom. It's the fact that the people feel as if this stuff was an easement for the railroad. The idea is that if the railroad ever wants to come back again, the railroad should be able to come back again. So it's always still there.
And what I can't remember now. Maybe you do, since you were on the council. How did it land in King County's hands? Did they buy the land from the railroad?
They probably took it.
That's right. So anyway, it is good for the greater good.
Oh,
I understand. Well, the people that get to use it, the public people that get to use this. Mm-hmm. This is similar. I think there was a fight over, was it near Laurelhurst or something, where there was a little stretch of land that the homeowners had just sort of taken over. It was really public access.
They kind
of blocked it off, and they had to go to court to get public access to it. So there are more people that are going to be able to benefit from it. But I understand if it was on your property, it'd probably feel like an imposition. They don't have to stay there. I'm sure it's gorgeous.
Taking everything from private property, from private owners, would benefit everyone. That's what Bernie Sanders would like to do. And Bernie is on stage with Elizabeth Warren. This is after the debate. And everybody went, ooh, what did they say? What did they say? CNN was able to isolate the microphone.
Yes.
This is an easy move. So here we go. You ready? So the debate ends, and you have your talking heads giving their impressions.
And at this point, all the candidates are shaking everybody's
walking
hands,
around,
going around saying hi.
Tom Steyer is trying to get on camera. Okay, so then you see Elizabeth walked over to Bernie?
Yes.
Yeah, she walks over to Bernie.
I think you called me a liar on national TV.
Let's not do it right now. You want to have that discussion? We'll have that discussion. You called me. All right, let's not do it now.
I don't want to get more. I just want to say hi.
Yeah, good. Okay.
Listen to Tom Steyer getting the short. No one's listening to that guy. Hang on. I like that. Just say hi, Bernie. Hang on. Say one more time.
I think you called me a liar on national TV.
So they're standing there. Tom Steyer's kind of in the background, just about
he's approaching. 3 feet away. He just shook hands with somebody. Now he's wants to shake hands with
coming
Bernie.
Coming over.
Doesn't realize he's walking into a.
Let's not do it right now. You want to have that discussion? We'll have that discussion.
Heard that women could not win the presidential election.
I guess the counter information that would be valuable to know is what has happened to her numbers. I mean, has she gained more money too because of this accusation? Right now, I don't think it matters that much, but since it's a progressive-on-progressive catfight, I wonder if she's gained by accusing Bernie, or if it's just in defense of Bernie.
I know that she has dropped to fourth place as far as donations. That's the quarter. I don't know if she went up a little bit because of this, right? Does this mean anything other than the fact that it was just fun to see them isolated?
No, I think it doesn't mean anything. I don't think it's a good look. The consensus on CNN and MSNBC, Fox didn't really have an analysis of the debate, but that about two-thirds of the people thought that Elizabeth Warren came out the best on the debate and in her interaction with Bernie Sanders. She handled that well during the debate, but I think this makes her look, one of the knocks against her is that she comes off as something of a scold, and I think that kind of reinforces that impression a bit to go after Bernie like that up on the stage. If
which
she really
which
wants
lie?
To
was it the lie of her being a Cherokee? Was it the lie of her talking about why she was left the job, that she was fired and she was pregnant? Which one was it? Which story was it that Bernie had lied about?
That she said, that Bernie, I know you don't want the answer, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. Uh-huh. Bernie told her in a discussion that a woman couldn't beat Trump in 2020.
Okay.
And he says, I never would have said that Hillary Clinton beat Trump in 2016. Why would I say a woman couldn't beat Trump in 2020?
So somebody's lying. Who is it? Who's lying, Tom?
I think they're both telling the truth. It's what they heard and what they meant to say and all of that. If CNN can isolate that lunch conversation from 2 years ago. Yeah, it would be a great.
Men
great
lie
journalism.
For self-orienting. Women lie for other-orienting. You know what the difference is?
No, I don't understand.
So a guy lies. Self-orienting is this. I've slept with 3,000 women.
Okay.
All right? That's a lie. Self-oriented. Women other-oriented. You look so great in that sweater. That is, what is that, like an off yellow kind of, okay. What is that, a beige?
Well, I think women's lies are better because they're compliments. They're being nice and polite. And men, it's nothing but braggadocio.
Okay.
But you think all lies are about other people. So
not all lies. It's just most of the time, a man will do a self-oriented lie. Lie about income, lie about inches, lie about what, you know, when it comes to catching a fish.
But a woman would not lie about herself. A woman
now, they'll lie just as much. Both men and women lie.
Would lie about others.
Okay. All right, so good for you, Bernie, and good for you, Elizabeth Warren. I guess that it's settled. I think it's over at this point. Former WSL and NFL player Steve Gleason has been honored by Congress for his work with ALS, and Tom has seen the documentary?
Documentary called Gleason.
Yes.
Came out 2-3 years ago.
We'll play this sound, okay. And then we'll talk about how it changed sort of your opinion about how people deal with a life-limiting illness.
They don't just give these out, you know. The Congressional Gold Medal is awarded only to the most uncommon people who show incredible bravery, dedication, and determination to advance their field, their country, and all humankind.
Right. Drew Brees also spoke.
You're an inspiration. You are a source of strength to so many, especially me. A true American hero.
Mm-hmm. Gleason, who has been fighting ALS for how long now?
I think 9 years.
So he went to WSU. He got picked up. He might have been a free agent. He gets picked up by the Saints. Does he play only, like, how many seasons did he play? Not many.
A few seasons, something like 80 games. But he was most remembered. There is literally a statue of him outside the Superdome in New Orleans. Because after Katrina collapsed that city, New Orleans came back in the first game. He blocked a punt to help them win the first game of the season. They went on to win the Super Bowl that year. So he was just seen as a football hero in New Orleans. And then, like, the next year, he gets diagnosed with the ALS. He just literally the same month that he got diagnosed with ALS, his wife found out that she was pregnant, you know, with their first child. Just an absolutely heartbreaking movie, I all my respect for him because he's willing to go through more than I think most of us would.
Gleason says fighting for ALS has kept him alive.
It has been unquestionably critical to my survival and purpose for the past 9 years, living with a disease as dreadfully beautiful as ALS.
Wow.
And he lost his voice many years ago, so that is a computer-generated ALS device that through his eyelids, through the flicking of his eyes, he can type things out and then have it voiced.
He says he can cure it together. We can.
If we can keep exploring, share our weaknesses with each other, and compassionately collaborate to solve problems, our human potential is boundless.
He also says in the documentary, because I had seen it as well, that it's his kid. Mm-hmm. He wants his child to see the kid at this point. I don't know how old he is at this point.
Well, look at him. I mean, he must be eight. If he's been battling it for 9, he's grown up. He was a little infant in the movie.
Yeah.
And now look at him. He's, he looks like, I don't know, fifth grade, fourth grade, something.
I want my child to see what it's like to fight, never to give up, never to surrender, no white flags. The idea that, I have this, but the greatest lesson I can teach him is that as adversity comes to you, no matter what the adversity is, you don't stop fighting.
And ALS is as harsh a disease as there is. And in the movie, there's an interesting point at which they say, because ALS normally kills people within like 2 to 3 years. But there is a point at the like the 4-year, 5-year mark where there is this really painful surgery that you could go through, and they say you'll never get better, but it might slow down you getting worse. Uh-huh. And most ALS people decide not to go through with it. It's not worth it. At the time, before he decided to go for this, he was having it took like 4 people a day to take care of him. He could not roll over in bed. He could not do anything for him. And he decided to go do it, and now he's lived another 4 years. Is growing up, and now what he's doing is great because he's fighting for ALS. He got Congress passed in 2008 the Gleason Act, which provided funding to help ALS patients get those devices where they can talk, but you know, by flashing their eyelids. Really an admirable, admirable man, and I don't know if I could do it. It's really hard on his wife too, but they seem to have come through it, and now he's a congressional gold medal winner.
I talked to my insurance guy the other day. He asked me if I wanted disability insurance. It's very expensive. And I told David, I will not be a burden to anyone. I will not let anyone bring a spoon to my chin, not wipe my ass, nothing. I have a plan to kill myself if I have to. If I feel as if I get to a point where someone has to roll me over, whatever, I'm done.
Yeah.
And he says, well, as your insurance guy, I don't want to hear about your plan.
Yes.
But I will talk to you about more of the benefits of disability insurance. I'm like, I don't care about disability. I'm telling you. If I am disabled to the point where someone has to take care of me, done.
Okay.
Done.
So you would say to Steve
I'll bury
Gleason,
myself as well. So that's much of an inconvenience. I will dig the hole.
But could you
do the deed, then just kick some dirt on
it. Could you look Steve Gleason in the eye and say, your life is not worth living for me?
No. Steve Gleason and myself and Steve Gleason's view of his life and what he's trying to teach his kids, I would teach my kids, I don't want to be dependent upon anybody. No one. I do not want you to take care of me. Leave me alone.
And yet,
let me go. I don't know what message it sends to my kids, but that's my life.
Look at how inspiring, though, he is to not only other people with ALS, but to people that have commitments to their family and to their kids. No, it's okay.
If he didn't have a kid, Tom, let me ask you this. If he didn't have a child, would he want people to be rolling him over and wiping his sores and doing all the other stuff for him?
I think that's a great question. We should address it to Gleason, but given how much good he's done for the ALS community, he might say, yes, my suffering for the betterment of others, that could be a good thing. I agree with you. I watched that movie and said, I don't think I would make the decision that Steve Gleason made either. Right. And I'm one of those guys that said I could live life in a jar if I could because I want to know what's going on in the world. All the impact he has on other people. The person I think it's hardest on is his wife.
Yes.
Remember, his wife was, this sounds dismissive, but she was something of a party girl. Remember, she thought she was marrying an NFL football player. She was just, her life has completely changed. She's now basically a 24-hour nursemaid to him. And because of that, it's like, what's the impact I'm having on my family? Is it worse that I'm here or better that I'm here?
Right back. Thank you, Muckleshoot Casino. Yeah. We said, hey, Muckleshoot Casino, we know you want to advertise, so we say the words Muckleshoot Casino as many times as possible on the radio. Where would you like to put that bet down? Where do you think it would be best use? You know what I mean, Tom? You can bet like red, black, you know, spin that roulette wheel around. Muckleshoot Casino said, we're going to lay it all out on sugar.
Instead of 3 sevens, is it just 3 pictures of my face?
Oh, you're going slot machine.
Yeah.
You like the loose slots.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Sometimes.
Did you see that I publicly shamed Tom Tingney on the internet yesterday for the way he eats a burrito?
He goes into a burrito like the Jack London's To Build a Fire did on his dog.
He goes in right in the center.
You like that?
That's a good literary reference.
Thank you.
Wow. I always think of you as literary.
Because you guys have this idea.
But literary.
You have this idea that I'm dumb, okay?
Because you're always wearing those cutoff jean shorts all the time.
Just undereducated.
If you guys listening want to see a picture of the savage way that Tom Tingney eats a breakfast burrito, which is truly horrible. I got so many messages of people saying you are clearly a psychopath.
Wow.
Go to my Facebook page.
That's not fair.
/ Rachel Bell. No.
Okay, Rachel, way to promote your Facebook page.
Yeah, Muckleshoot Casino gets $1 every time I promote it.
Ken Jennings has won. Is he now the smartest guy in the world?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, after you.
Good, yeah. He has a chance to talk about the fact that so he had the other two guys that he was competing against. These are the champions of all time on Jeopardy. He ends up winning. But a couple of months ago or a while ago, you got a chance to sit down and talk to him, right?
Yeah, so just to summarize, this week, Jeopardy did something they never did before, and they did the greatest of all time match. So it was Seattle's Ken Jennings, who 15 years ago broke the record for winning 74 consecutive games. He was the top earner. Now he's the second top earner. And so they brought him back to go up against these two other champions, James Holzhauer and Brad Rutter. And he ended up winning $1 million this week. Spoiler alert, which it's just so cool that he used his brain and he made $1 million in a week. But I had him on my podcast, Always Be Plug-In. It's called Your Last Meal. I interview celebrities about what they would eat for their last meal. And Ken was a guest. And he talks about his knack for trivia.
Trivia kids are born and not made. Like, you just know if you have that kind of kid that's always dragging the Guinness Book of World Records around and annoying mom and dad with facts about polar bears or whatever. I was very much that kid. We lived overseas. Our only contact to U.S. culture was like Army TV and radio. As a result, me and all my friends were obsessed with Jeopardy because every day after school at four, that's what the Army put on TV. We would run home from school and there was only one thing to watch. We all watched Jeopardy and we were just like an obsessive fan club of Jeopardy even at 10 years old.
Obviously, you're a smart person, but is trivia more smarts or memorization, being curious and reading a lot of stuff, or both?
Yeah, it's mostly a parlor trick. It does boil down to curiosity. People you see on Jeopardy, they're not savants with photographic memories, you know, Rain Man types. They don't memorize the phone book. They're just really curious about the world and pretty much without distinction for type of knowledge. You know, most normal people are like, yeah, I'm interested in history, but oh, don't ask me about science, or love baseball, don't really get hockey. You know, trivia people are just omnivorous. And when you're interested in something, facts just stick. Mm. So these people aren't trying to know everything. They're just really engaged in the world around them. And without even meaning to, they just know stuff.
So he says he mostly has this stuff in his head, but he does do some flashcards because there are certain categories that always come up.
Cocktails, like I don't drink, but there's always potent potables on Jeopardy. So I memorize the ingredients for all these cocktails. You know, I could today, this day, I could mix a Harvey Wallbanger if I had to. I don't know if the world's crying out for a Mormon bartender, but
I'll play one more cut. So anybody who's watched Jeopardy knows there's that part in the show where Alex Trebek goes around to each contestant and does a little tiny schmooze with them. And 15 years ago when Ken Jennings was on 75 shows, you know, Alex was running out of things to ask him about.
I remember one time he just got fed up and he was like, Ken, is there anything you want to ask me? And I had no idea this was coming. You know, I hemmed and hawed for, you know, 10 seconds. And I finally said, well, what did you have for breakfast this morning, Alex? And I'll never forget what he said to me.
What did he say?
A Diet Pepsi and a Baby Ruth.
What? That is so unexpected.
The breakfast of champions.
I always imagine that Alex Trebek is like Ned Flanders on The Simpsons, that underneath that suit, he is ripped and he has like a 13-pack. Yeah. But all he drinks is soda and eats candy bars.
Not all. On that particular
yes,
day.
Yes, no, that's not
for breakfast.
It's what he likes.
I'm going to stop eating my burrito from inside out and start drinking Diet Pepsi and having a Baby Ruth.
I'm going to play one more cut just because I love this. What we talk about on the podcast is the national, if you will, food of Utah, which is where Ken Jennings is from.
Utah has regional food. Do you know what it is?
No.
Jell-O. Utah is well known for its bizarre Jell-O concoctions, like from a 1958 Better Homes and Gardens magazine. Like, my mom makes a Jell-O that has black cherry Jell-O with cubes of cream cheese, slivered almonds, and like some kind of canned cherry, and then like some Dr. Pepper or something in it.
Mixed in, or she just pours it over the whole thing.
Yeah, it's like,
and then
lights it on fire.
Yeah.
As she's plating it.
I recommend following Ken Jennings on Twitter. He is very funny. I think a lot of people just think of him as a really smart dork, but he's pretty sassy. And also listen to him on my podcast. Look up that episode.
I like when he makes fun of Baron Trump.
Oh, I haven't seen that. But he's pretty good at making fun of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like the grandmother that talked about how Alf came back. They brought Alf back and used to watch the show Alf with her disabled son. And then she said, I'm so happy they brought it back. It reminds me of my son. We buried him with an Alf doll. And then Ken Jennings said, awful MAGA grandmother. Favorite person on Twitter. Follow him on Twitter. You can enjoy some of that stuff.
John collects these kinds of outrages.
It's not an outrage, Tom. You're just bringing it. You don't know that
I've
story?
I've never heard such a calmly delivered rant.
Yeah. No.
You're promoting his Twitter. That. I'm just saying that, just pointing
he's
out.
He's an
that,
awful person.
You know what? You can't have light without darkness.
What's that?
You implied
can't
that.
Have light without darkness.
I didn't say he's an awful person. She said, follow him on Twitter. He's pretty sassy. I'm just bringing up the fact that he makes fun of or makes kind of a side shot at Trump's kid because he hates Donald Trump. So that's all.
Let's move on.
Oh, sorry. I don't mean to darken the party. Okay? Just
well,
bringing
you did.
Some stories to light that have not been brought to light. Because the people that listen to this show know the stories of when he was going after President Trump and Trump's kids. So it's like, hey, why not mention that? They're just throwing that in there. They're just serving the people. You know what I found out? Why Mike Kubucha?
Is he still talking, Rachel? Tell me when it's over.
I found out why Mike Kubucha always explodes.
I won't know because I'm not listening either.
Okay, well, I mean, this is a drinky question.
Wait, I do want to know about why your kombucha always explodes.
Did you notice that?
It did seem to happen more often
what?
Than
you shake it.
No, I don't. You don't shake it. You don't shake it, right?
Is this because you run up the street?
No.
Is this a SCOBY related issue?
So I get it at that bakery down the street. So I see the guy get it, and as he's walking over to the cash register, he's shaking it up. And I said to him, whoa, what are you doing? He goes, I'm just kind of mixing up the stuff on the bottom for you.
I guess it's the same as, like, don't get sushi at a steak restaurant. Don't get kombucha at a bakery.
And I said, what do you mean?
Doesn't know how to handle it.
Stuff floating in the bottom. I'm just trying to mix it up for you. I said,
that's the mother. Let the mother settle to the bottom.
That mother is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I said, little chunks of SCOBY.
I told him. He goes, I don't drink this stuff. I said, oh, no. Every time you open it now, it's going to explode.
It's an effervescent drink.
You have anything else you want to add? Oh, Bed Bath & Beyond. Can we
save
that?
We don't have time.
Can we say that for Monday?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
You know you're not here tomorrow.
I know.
Where are you going to go tomorrow, and what are you going to have for breakfast?
I'm going to go get an Alf doll from the Goodwill and tweet about it.
Okay, then what else?
Eat the stuffing for breakfast.
And what else?
And then a Dr. Pepper and a Baby Ruth.
Yeah.
Diet Dr. Pepper?
And then go to Rachel's Facebook page and watch Tom eat.
Yeah.
Did you know she's videotaping you?
No, I wasn't eating it. It's the carcass of the burrito.
It's a still life.
Back up and working correctly again, Tom? They fixed it?
Yeah, apparently so. It's great. Fast work.
Look how quickly the team came up.
I know. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Everybody's listening.
I guess I'm important.
You are. Your voice needs to be heard. Okay, this is kind of fun. You can figure out what concerts people go to alone. First of all, around the horn, you ever been to a concert by yourself?
I'm sure, yes.
You don't remember?
Well, I've been to
Who
so
drove
many.
You home? No. Yeah. You go to a concert, you go buy one ticket. You go in, you walk by yourself.
Yeah.
Yes or no? Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Not all the time, but certainly
sometimes.
Okay,
we'll take it as a yes.
Yeah.
Can we turn his microphone off again? Chris Martin, been to a concert by yourself?
Yeah, a bunch of times.
Okay, yeah. Same with Tom.
Yeah, also several times, yeah.
Really?
Well, I've occasionally gotten media passes, and then none of my friends could afford to go to the things I got the media pass to, and so then I have to go by myself.
Okay. Do you feel strange in there when you're sort of jamming by yourself?
Yes, and then no. At the beginning, it's always a little bit weird, but I think eventually you start to gel into the crowd, and it doesn't matter anymore.
Oh, you got to gel into the crowd.
Yeah, and you, John, never go anywhere alone.
I've went to one concert by myself. I saw Bruce Hornsby in the Range,
and wasn't it worth it?
Yeah, it was only like $5.
Yeah,
and I had because he played some small little venue in Philadelphia just as his first big thing came out, and I knew all the words. I don't know how I found the cassette, and I'm standing there by myself singing every song.
Okay, now that's weird.
That is not weird.
If you're the only guy and you're singing along, they're going to think, what's wrong with this guy?
No.
Wow, get a life.
Like, what happens? The guy next to me, no one had heard of Bruce Hornsby.
Yeah.
So no one knew any of the words.
Yeah.
But I knew them all.
So you're showing off.
So no, I'm not showing
you're
off.
You're weird.
Okay, that is not weird.
Don't ever go alone.
That's just enjoying. Okay, and I'm like this. I'm like, I know this one. Guy's like, okay, good. I mean, this is a great one.
If ever I would leave you.
Wouldn't be soon enough. So what concerts do people go to alone?
K-pop, hip-hop, and alternative music. Most of us, about 65% of us, 80% of all ticket purchases are at least two people. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're for three and four. Country music tends to have people buy in groups. You tend to go, country music is known for being group-oriented, but individual shows like hip-hop, Korean pop, and alternative are they have the highest percentage of singles. They're still outnumbered by the people that buy it, you know, doubles and more. And they're wondering why that is. One of it is that the older kinds of music styles tend to have people coupling up or going in groups. They're just not as passionate, they suggest. If you're into K-pop, Korean pop, you are, like, out of your mind with that. They're so passionate. They'll buy, if they're performing, BTS is performing four shows, say, in your hometown, you go to all four shows. Not everyone would go together. So they said it might have something to do with the youth. It might have something to do with passion. And then, finally, they say a lot of the groups that allow for a lot of single tickets, they tend to be general admission tickets. Well, if it's general admission tickets, you don't have to buy a particular seat. So it doesn't feel like you're going with somebody. Okay, and I'm going to go with Larry or Beverly or whatever. You just go and enjoy yourself because it's general admission. You rush to your seat wherever you
are. No one's named Beverly anymore.
That's why I threw it in there. I thought it'd be funny. I'm trying to learn at your at your feet.
Beverly. We're now going to hear from a bunch of people named Beverly. I'm named Beverly. Yeah, I'll go to a concert with you.
So.
If the crowd kind of embraces you, if you're sort of, as Jacob says, gelling to the crowd, you kind of get it with hanging out with other people, that's, you know, then it seems okay. But you're just sort of isolated and you feel people moving away from you because you're singing every word.
By the way, my wife is a huge Elton John fan. When he performed at the Tacoma Dome, we always go together to concerts. We decided, or I decided, I was going to give up my seat. So she went alone so she could take the price of my ticket and get a much better seat. Isn't that a great thing? And she said, yeah, she had a great time, but she missed me.
But she went
That's
by
the
herself,
perfect wife, but she went to her by herself.
For you, Tom. Right back.